have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA, everybody. I'm Andy Homan. Happy Juneteenth on Saturday.
Happy Bloomsday today. I'm Ann Northrup.
40 years ago, the CDC issued an announcement of a mysterious cluster of illnesses among gay men on the coasts, what we came to call AIDS. But the first public report came shortly before that from Dr. Larry Mass, a gay doctor, writer, and activist in New York. He is our guest today.
We're going to go over the true history. We're also going to show you the Biden's pride message for 2021.
And Vice President Kamala Harris and Doug Emhoff marched in the D.C. Pride Walk this weekend.
On the fifth anniversary of the massacre at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, Congress makes it a national memorial.
Public LGBTQ symbols have been defaced as new ones surface, including one from the sky.
There are several angles, LGBTQ angles, on the Pulitzer Prizes. We'll tell you all of those.
And an out lesbian is now in charge of the Grammy Awards.
And an American Idol star comes out 13 years after finishing second on the show.
Okay, but we welcome...
Never too late.
Never. We welcome Dr. Larry Mass. There you are. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Andy and Ann. Hi.
Larry is an old friend and an old friend of the show. We should say that, but let me introduce you. You are a co-founder of the Gay Men's Health Crisis. You wrote these first press reports that we're going to talk about. You're also the author of We Must Love One Another or Die, The Life and Legacies of Larry Kramer, and a memoir, Confessions of a Jewish Wagnerite, Being Gay and Jewish in America. You work in addiction medicine in New York City, where you live with your life partner for 39 years, Arnie Kantrowitz, a great gay activist in his own right. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just one small correction there. I'm now retired as of September.
Congratulations.
But, okay. Still a physician, still find myself quite absorbed and involved in a lot of things.
So take us back to 1981. What you learned and what you did about it.
Well, you know, before the show, we were talking a little bit about those meetings in Larry Kramer's living room. Well, just prior to that, what happened was that I was working in addiction medicine part-time, and I had started writing for the gay press mostly as a watchdog for what was going on in psychiatry. There was a strongly reactionary movement to reclassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. And I had my own really intense experience with this. I had decided, I was an anesthesiologist by training, and I decided to do a second residency in psychiatry. And I went to the Chicago area. I had a lover in Chicago, and I interviewed for these residency programs at Northwestern, University of Chicago, and University of Illinois. And I casually came out. They wanted to know why I wanted to be in Chicago. I was coming from Boston. And I said, well, my lover is here, and I want to be with him. Well, they were absolutely livid. I mean, the level of homophobia that I encountered, it was simply astounding. I not only was not accepted to any of those residency programs, I never even got rejection letters from two of them. So, I mean, and so my activism.
And that was the 70s, Larry?
This was the late 1970s. I was living in Boston. That's where I did my medical training. And so my first...
And wait a minute, hold it. That's after we've been removed from the index of mental disorders.
Yes, that was 73, 74. That's a critical point. So I had done this... naively, I had gone into these interviews thinking, well, my God, we got declassified in 73, 74. Everything was normal. Everything's great. Everybody's happy. And, you know, so I'll just be, you know, casually come out and tell them the truth and all that. Ooh, boy. They were not ready for that. So my very first act of activism was my writing. And I wrote this sort of big piece that was the centerpiece of gay community news in Boston in August of 1979 called Psychiatry on Trial. That's what I originally called it Trial by Ordeal, but they called it Psychiatry on Trial, telling about this whole experience with the residency and so forth. So anyway, I was determined at that point. I no longer wanted to do the second residency. I stopped the interview process, but I stayed connected with gay psychiatrists, and I worked with them in various ways. And I ended up moving to New York, which is what I wanted to do, and I took part-time work in addiction medicine and methadone maintenance, and that's where I was at Greenwich House. At that time, they had a clinic on 20th Street. This was 1981, and I was writing these pieces on psychiatry and sex research and all this stuff. And, you know, the people involved in gay health, we were just a ragtag group of individuals. There was people like Dan William. Everybody knows about Joe Sonnabend. Just a handful of us. And, I was doing it from the psychiatry angle, but, you know, all these STDs were spiking in the gay community. There was amebiasis, syphilis, gonorrhea. There were, you know, it was really kind of, you know, and I was a physician and I was interested in all aspects of this. And so it kind of fell on me to start writing about gay health. I think I wrote a couple of pieces about the STD spikes, and in very short order. So I was talking about this ragtag group of us, those involved in gay health. One of the people on the periphery of this was Dr. Joyce Wallace. Did anybody know her?
Yes, remember? Addiction medicine, definitely, right?
Well, Joyce was a real maverick, independent character. I mean, she was, her mission was to do outreach to prostitutes. So you talk about
outreach. Oh, yes,
outcasts.
Thank you, yes, yes.
Yeah, they had absolutely no constituency, no recognition. They had no resources, nothing. And she was trying to do outreach. So she sort of connected with several of us because we were all doing this kind of border, unorthodox community medicine. We were individuals doing individual work, trying to do creative work and outreach in community medicine. So Joyce became my buddy, and I would, you know, we'd see her at this meeting or this event or that. So one day I got a call from her, and she said, Larry said, I can't really talk. She said, but there's something going on. I said, she was not always the most articulate or clear person. She was very discursive and tangential, like me, actually. Everybody's probably lost at this point already. But anyway, so she said, well, she said, there's some cases of pneumonia, gay men in intensive care units and ICUs and, emergency rooms and, something is going on. She said, but I can't talk about it. They told me I can't tell anybody anything. And within a minute, she had kind of hung up. But what she was doing was she immediately recognized that the people most affected were not being consulted or contacted. And so she called me, and she wasn't sure what to do because she was being asked to keep everything in confidence. Anyway, within that day, I called the New York City Department of Health, and I ended up speaking to Dr. Steve Phillips. I don't remember what his title was. But anyway, we, you know, he said, well, there are in fact some cases. We don't really know what's going on. That seems to be, they seem to have immune disturbances that are underlying what's going on. And there, you know, he wouldn't say very much. But what he told me became the substance of what became the very first piece that was published in any press.
Well, you know, your first piece was disease rumors largely unfounded.
Yeah, it was a short little news piece in the New York Native, and it was called Disease Rumors Largely Unfounded. And that, you know, that wasn't, the headlines are done by the editors. You know, that was like Chuck Ortlieb's choice. It wasn't unreasonable because, you know, we really didn't know what was going on. And of course, none of us wanted to create panic, based on such, you know, limited, information. It was concerning. And, you know, so obviously something was going on, but we weren't getting much information, but there was enough to make this little article, Disease Rumors Largely Unfounded, May 18th, 1981. So I have known Larry for since the late 1960s.
Larry Kramer,
yeah, Friendship Circles Networks. And, you know, I was pretty, you know, my transition to New York, Larry was one of the people who kind of really helped me sort of move from Boston to New York. I mean, he was one of my friends and contact people in New York. And so anyway, in very short order, I called him, and then it was quite chaotic. You know, there was Larry immediately got on the bandwagon of very great concern and what can we do? What are we going to do? What, how do we go about this? And, you know, from day one, this being day one, Larry was very aggressive in terms of wanting to take leadership and move forward and do things.
The CDC comes out with the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly in June, and then the New York Times writes a little story in the Times, July 3rd, 1981.
Right. Well, there. So my little news thing was the very first thing that was published in the press. Then subsequently, the next two things were CDC MMWR reports, June 5th and July 3rd. June 5th described several cases of pneumocystis, a few cases of pneumocystis in Los Angeles. And the July 3rd report was of cases of pneumocystis, but the report was primarily about cases of KS in New York City and Los Angeles. That day, July 3rd, concurrent with that CDC report, was Lawrence Altman's report
in the New York Times.
Now, I don't, the rare cancer seen in 41 homosexuals. Now, I don't know when was the last time you looked at that report. I wish I could show it to you. It was a long, single, slender column.
One column.
The bulk of the page says, it was an ad by Independent Savings Bank showing the notes of a song, Sing Out for Independence. The sadism of the way these two articles were juxtaposed, it can't have been coincidental. It can't have escaped the notice of the editors. Nobody's ever commented on this. So meanwhile, Lawrence Altman's article, I don't know, again, it really is worth rereading. The word gay is not mentioned anywhere. There's no outreach even touched on or suggested to the gay community.
Times didn't use the word gay in those days. They didn't use
what?
The word.
They didn't even use the word gay still. I mean, you know, the homophobia at the Times was, you know, Larry, you know, when you look, Larry always seemed so incendiary and so alarmist. And when you look back at Larry now, it was really just straightforward, accurate, you know, his attacks. And
but I'm trying to get you, Larry, to focus on what you were seeing and what were you feeling at that time about this.
That's a really good question. I had a mix of feelings. you know, this was very concerning. It was very, very serious. But at the same time, we needed to know what we were dealing with. We did not want to initiate a huge panic based on a lot of information that wasn't substantiated. We didn't want a lot of conspiracy theories. And, you know, almost immediately there was a very short order, there was talk about gay cancer and GRID, gay related immune deficiency. I came from a kind of conservative medical background. When I trained at Mass General Hospital in association with Harvard Medical School. I was very, very liberal in terms of my gay politics and my belief in the gay community. But I was conservative in the sense that, you know, I felt like you don't just jump on theoretical bandwagons.
But your first article in the Native, a big article, was called Cancer in the Gay Community. It may not have been the title. I remember this in July of 1981. I was a Catholic. We copied it and distributed it to everybody in the membership of Dignity, hundreds and hundreds of people, because there was no information coming out.
Exactly. And that was the first feature that was written on the epidemic by anybody. Don Drake began for the Philadelphia Inquirer began writing features around the same time, but I'm virtually certain that was the first feature by anybody. That article is the one that Larry Kramer took out to Fire Island to distribute to the houses in Fire Island Pines and Cherry Grove. So, yeah, I mean, there was nobody was covering it. And Larry was, really powerfully articulate about that, you know, that, you know, nobody's paying attention. Nobody's, you know, all of that was, you know, true and right. And we needed to move aggressively forward, doing whatever we could do. It was, but I was, there was a part of me that didn't fit in with Larry kind of from the beginning, because I was worried about the levels of alarm that were being sounded without, you know, in the absence of more specific information. What were we dealing with? If it's one thing to tell everybody, okay, stop having sex altogether. Okay, but exactly what does that mean? No more kissing, no more f***ing, no more, you know, you know, there was a lot of, I'm sorry.
We did not know. Now, you were part of the meeting. I was there, too, when Larry called everybody together in his apartment to listen to Dr. Friedman Kind describe this. You said there were other preliminary meetings. But then you and several others with Larry Kramer formed Gay Men's Health Crisis. What was the purpose at that time for GMHC?
Well, at that time, again, we didn't even know that we were dealing with a single epidemic. We didn't even know exactly for sure what it was. We knew there were people getting seriously ill and dying. We knew that. So, and we knew that there were these cases of chaos. So the priorities were we needed immediately to try to do some kind of research. And there was no funding for that. I mean, there was no, it had to be immediately organized and formed. Then there was, you know, basic service and information setups and outreach, you know, a hotline, you know, trying to put together some kind of information like a flyer about what you need to know about our gay men's health crisis, which the gay men's health crisis didn't, that name was decided on not like at the first meeting, but after a couple of meetings. And by the way, I was the lone holdout on that. I actually agreed to it at that meeting, but I was the naysayer because my conservative medical background, you don't link a disease to a constituency, a population, an ethnicity. It's not gay cancer. It's not, you know, so gay men's health crisis struck me as very troubled from the beginning. In retrospect, I think I was wrong. I think that name has served everybody very well, very honorably. I have no regrets about it. It's a little bit like YMCA or NAACP. They, you know, you could quibble, you could argue about the appropriateness of the name, but it's found a distinguished and honorable place for itself. So I have no objections at this point. But you see what's happened in this COVID pandemic with Trump and the China virus. I mean, there are some real issues and concern about what China did and what China do and all the stuff like that. But I mean, it's not the China virus. Sorry. I mean, one kind of exception to that that's kind of interesting that has kind of endured over time, the Spanish influenza. Somehow that name, people still use it. As it turns out, I mean, nobody, I've never heard anybody say, well, those damn Spanish, look what they gave us. You know, no, they, but at the time they did, it caused bias against Spanish people when they call, for calling it Spanish influenza. Now I think all of that is dissipated.
You're talking about 100 years ago and the last big pandemic of flu. And, you know, it's indicative of what Ann Northrup says. We're a failed species.
I do say that, and I think we're driving ourselves to extinction very fast. But the key question for me is, because you did write that first piece and you were there when all this was happening, you know, we're looking back and noting the 40th anniversary of that first report in the New York Times and from the CDC. And my frustration is that I know this started long before. I know we have an identified case in, I think, 1959 or something in St. Louis. Right. And right. I just want to, as we wrap this up, I want to get a sense from you of the sense at this time of, I assume people saw each other getting sick and dying, and that to peg this to 40 years ago is a real misreading of what was actually going on.
Well, when you say to peg this to 40 years ago is a misreading, I'm not sure what you're saying, Anne.
Well, people are acting by observing this 40-year from the CDC report as if that's when AIDS started. And well, I think that's a mistake.
Well, there probably were earlier cases. The epidemic that we named AIDS, as it unfolded at that time in the spring of 1981 and since, that phenomenon that most people think of as AIDS, that is what we're talking about as AIDS. I think there is a very real possibility that eventually nomenclature could change depending on what else we find out about the, you know, how far back the virus went and where all else it was. And, you know, it's history, great, more history than we've already learned about the virus in Africa and so forth. But I think most people have a sense that's legitimate that, you know, we're talking about the epidemic of AIDS as we kind of demarcated it since from that period in 1981. Doesn't mean
okay.
That.
Yeah. Sure. All right. Well, thank you, Larry. It is really terrific to be able to talk to you about those days and have that resource. And the work continues, the investigation, and certainly the epidemic is not over. And we continue to follow it every week. And we appreciate your contributions.
Well, I just want to thank you both so much. This is such there's nothing like Gay USA in terms of the depth and the quality and the extent of coverage of gay issues. I mean, where would we be without this show? And so I am so honored to be here. I can't even begin to tell
you. Don't start that.
Thank you so much.
There is nothing like Gay USA was enough right there. I think
thank you, Larry, and give our best to Arnie. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Happy
All
Pride,
right.
Larry. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, okay. This is Pride Month, and those are two people, Arnie and Larry, who we can have a lot of pride in, and that's a hell of a bit of history.
It is. But now we'll go to present day news, which will soon be history. And we'll start with the President of the United States.
Hi, everyone. We want to wish you a happy Pride Month and let you know how proud we are to stand with you this month and every month. For the LGBTQ community, for our nation, and for the world, Pride Month represents so very much.
It stands for defiance in the face of injustice, the legacy of Stonewall, and the fight to ensure that all people be treated with dignity and respect. It's a fight that resonates this year on the 40th anniversary of the HIV/AIDS crisis and the 5th anniversary of the deadly attack at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando.
Pride stands for courage. Courage of all those in generations gone by and today who proudly lived their truth. It stands for justice. As June marks the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision delivering marriage equality and protecting LGBTQ employees from discrimination. And above all else, Pride Month stands for love.
Make no mistake, we still have a lot of work to do to ensure that everyone enjoys the full promise of equity, dignity, and protection. And that's especially true for trans people and for LGBTQ people of color.
But we're making progress in executive orders and federal laws and representation and in hearts and minds. Our administration is always going to have your back. And we're going to fight to pass the Equality Act and build a better LGBTQ life for young people.
Thank you for being you. And we hope you have a bright and joyful Pride.
God bless you. God bless you all.
Another piece of video you're not going to be seeing on the Fox Channel. Thank you, President Biden and Dr. Jill Biden.
I like the rainbow bouquet of flowers behind them, and I like that LGBTQ comes trippingly off his tongue these days. And there was an interesting development this week from his administration. The Department of Education announced today, Wednesday, as we're taping, that they have issued a notice of interpretation that they will enforce the Supreme Court's Bostock decision in terms of education around preventing discrimination against and harassment of kids in schools on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, they talked about harassment and discrimination. They did not talk specifically about sports. But that's going to come up at some point, and we hope they'll use this standard there, too.
They're invoking Bostock, but there's a lot of skepticism about whether it will compel local officials to make changes in all these anti-trans sports laws that they're passing around the country.
Well, we'll see whether they go after them. You know, our people, all our legal organizations are challenging these bad laws in court. And I assume we'll get some support from the Biden administration. And I am fully confident that we'll succeed in getting rid of these. But having the Equality Act would go a long way to wiping that out.
And then in a first, the Vice President of the United States joined the Capitol Pride Walk. And there she is. She just jumped in with a bunch of unhappy Secret Service people. marching in the march.
And her husband. We're going to see her husband in a second.
Rob Emhoff.
They all look like a rainbow flag with the various aides.
This was a great surprise to the audience and to us.
The huge audience. Well, they seem very excited. There's the husband.
The rainbow shirt.
He's wearing a nice rainbow t-shirt.
And she, at the end of this, she delivers her Pride address after asking permission to jump on the
air. Well, that's coming up right about now.
Happy Pride, everybody. Hello. Hi.
Are all protected? We need still protections around employment and housing. There is so much more work to do. And I know we are committed and we understand the importance of this movement and our roles of leadership in this ongoing movement.
Happy Pride, Madam Vice President. Kamala also held a dinner this week for all women in the Senate. 16 Democrats, 8 Republicans were invited. The only Democrat not to come was Kyrsten Sinema, and 2 Republicans, Cynthia Hyde-Smith and Cynthia Loomis.
Well, I'm glad the other Republicans came, and I hope she talked to them about the request by the Mattachine Society of D.C., which is seeking congressional acknowledgement of and an apology for the federal assault on LGBTQ employees and people generally for the last 70 years. The Mattachine Society is not asking for reparations. They're just asking for acknowledgement that the federal government screwed us over, and an apology for that.
Right. So this was also the 5th anniversary of the Pulse massacre in Orlando at that club, and Congress voted to make it a national memorial. Congress seems to be willing to do things like this.
Not pass the Equality Act, not do anything about gun control, but they'll make Pulse a national memorial.
But there was a rally, an observance in Orlando, and a rainbow appeared in the sky over the ceremony. It's very hard to make out, but it's just to the left of the telephone pole right over that building. But they saw it, and they were most moved.
Yeah. And then here in New York, Gays Against Guns, the longstanding group which has been fighting for gun control ever since the Pulse massacre, did their ceremony, including their 49 people dressed in white who are called the Human Beings, each carrying a sign commemorating the life of one of the people massacred at Pulse. I was at the ceremony. It started out on the Christopher Street Pier and then moved to Sheridan Square to the Stonewall Park. Very, very moving always. They move silently. There was a good-sized crowd, and they brought this right to the crowds around the Stonewall Inn and Stonewall Park.
And in other national news, not a shock, but disgusting nonetheless, Mitch McConnell said if the Republicans get back the Senate in 2022, we're not going to confirm any Supreme Court nomination from Joe Biden. He didn't even say it. Maybe they're not going to confirm any federal judges that Biden puts up.
Well, if they don't have the majority, Biden can confirm his judges if all the Democrats go along with it. But if we give him the Senate majority, then that's the end of any confirmations.
And Stephen Breyer, Supreme Court Justice, I know you watch every week. Time to retire and let the Democratic Senate put a replacement in for you. You're 82 years old. You've done a good job. I'm not saying you're incompetent. AOC is saying the same thing.
Well, it's interesting that McConnell would say this, because on the one hand, he energizes Democrats to vote for Democrats. On the other hand, he energizes Republicans to vote for Republicans. So that's a risky proposition. Maybe we can take out of order the picture that is the warning from the heavens to Mitch McConnell and to his Senate colleague from Tennessee,
Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky. I'm sorry.
Lexington. Yeah. Lexington, which is a relatively progressive city, they have a rainbow walk, but then they got a double rainbow over the sky. And it's not just a message to McConnell, but to Rand Paul as well.
Yes. So watch out, Mitch. We are watching and we are energized, and we're going to try to get more Senate seats next year, not fewer.
So the Virginia had their primaries this week. Terry McAuliffe is the Democratic nominee for governor again. The Republican is a Trumpian newcomer, Glenn Youngkin, who can self-fund. He was asked whether he supported marriage equality, which has been legal in the United States since 2015, and he declined to answer. McAuliffe told Trump to stay out of Virginia. But of course, what he really wants, according to Larry Sabato, is for Trump to come in and campaign with this guy.
Well, better news from the governor of Nevada, Steve Sisolak, who signed four bills with the Equality Group this week, one mandating teaching marginalized history as a whole, but including LGBTQ people in grades kindergarten through 12th grade, collecting LGBTQ demographic data, decriminalizing HIV-positive sex. We told you about that a week or two ago. And allowing LGBTQ-owned businesses to be defined as minority-owned businesses. Thank you, Governor Sisolak.
Yes, New York City has a law about collecting that data, and they don't. The federal government doesn't collect that data either, and the National LGBT Chamber of Commerce is calling on them to do it.
Good news from Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, who signed an executive order saying no state money for conversion therapy, either for sexual orientation or gender identity. That is good news. Well, I was going to say in West Virginia, we have a new member of the tribe, Delegate Joshua Higginbotham, 24 years old, member of the legislature there, a Republican, a conservative Christian Republican, has come out.
Well, he is conservative. He's for authorizing special license plates for the Second Amendment and prohibiting minors from dropping out of school unless they're emancipated. But he is a sponsor of the state bill banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And he is getting support from his colleagues.
And he's the only Republican who voted against the no trans in sports bill in schools. I'm the only Republican who did that.
And maybe we don't believe in conversion therapy, but maybe he'll want to come over to the other side.
Maybe. The mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, has proposed a pilot program of giving $2 million to the trans community over the next 2 years. That's a good thing.
And, well, Human Rights Campaign president, Alfonso David, called on corporations not to expand in the states that have passed anti-LGBT legislation. But we learned this week from Popular Information, the website, and we will link to this in our email. Sign up for our email at gayusatv.org, and you can be on our list. They found 25 companies quick to honor Pride, but are shamelessly donating more than $10 million to anti-LGBTQ politicians at the state and local levels over the last 2 years. CVS, AT&T, Comcast, United Health Group, Walgreens, Wells Fargo, ExxonMobil, and Google, among others. So try not using any of those companies. It's difficult.
Well, and CVS was on the list, which sort of shook me. These are 25.
That's where we get our drugs.
That's where I get my milk. 25. These 25 companies are all on HRC's corporate equity index with 100% ratings because of their policies towards their employees or the community. But at the same time, they have given $10 million to right-wing politicians who are the ones passing these laws against us.
Go to popular.info and you can read all about it. And again, we will link to it. How about that Ipsos survey of 27 countries? Nearly one in five young adults do not identify as straight. Among Generation Z, born after 1997, 4% ideas trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, or another way. I'd say the recruitment drive is working out very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an online survey, but it is 19,000 people in 27 countries, ages 16 to 74. So the fact that almost a fifth of the young people self-identify as non-heterosexual is quite impressive.
In Brooklyn, thousands again marched in the third Brooklyn Liberation March for transgender youth.
I thought it was the second.
Mm-hmm. All right.
They had that first big black trans march at Brooklyn Museum rally last year, and I think this was the second.
Anyway, Shay R. Avery said, "We're here to claim space. We have a right not just to survive, but to thrive, to demand our movements show up and center us." That comes in the midst of anti-transgender legislation around the country, though not in New York, all the speakers were 25 and under.
The new Pride agenda, the statewide lobbying group in New York State, a relatively new group after the old one dissolved, has hired Alyssa Crespo as its first official executive director. She's a trans woman, Latinx from the Bronx, ex-sex worker, HIV positive, ran for office. She's quite the political operative, and she should bring real energy to the new Pride agenda.
Maybe I'll vote for her for mayor. It's very difficult to do this now. Don't ask me what to do.
Out gay member of the Pennsylvania legislature, Brian Sims. Boy, did you see his speech?
No. That's where I watched the show.
Well, he... the legislature in Pennsylvania wants to mess around with abortion, and he got up and gave a stem winder like I have not seen in a long time and talked about the 70% male, all-white Republicans who want to mess with women's reproductive rights, and he got cut off in the middle of the speech. The leader of the legislature cut off his speech.
Today they're messing with elections, as most Republican legislatures are, where they're trying to literally steal elections and just install people in office rather than have people vote for them. I mean, I am not exaggerating this, folks. If people don't wake up to this in 2 minutes, we're dead. In Virginia, Leesburg Elementary School teacher Tanner Cross was placed on leave for refusing to use pronouns that align with gender identity, because he's a big Christian and he says he can't do it. He was reinstated by a judge pending the trial. Cross says his God won't let him behave decently. That's not exactly how he put it, but that's the truth. The judge calls it free speech. And of course, he's being represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom right-wing religious group.
There's still a case going on to decide his status, but he's been reinstated pending that. In the New York State Assembly, they passed the Gender Recognition Act, which also passed a few days earlier in the New York State Senate, sponsored by Danny O'Donnell and Brad Hoylman. This allows the X gender signifier on documents, state documents, self-attestation for gender identity, and no requirement for publishing your new name to have that certified.
Can we do the Pulitzers?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's time to do, Elizabeth, New Jersey, and the Marsha P. Johnson mural that was defaced. We have a little video of that. Let's take a look at
our campaign now underway to restore a mural honoring a transgender activist. And the mural was vandalized. The mural of Marsha Johnson, created in her hometown of Elizabeth, New Jersey. But someone painted over it in what activists call an act of hate. Eyewitness News reporter Michelle Charlesworth live in Elizabeth with more on this story. Michelle.
Well, this is a young, vibrant group of activists from Elizabeth who made this happen. They're all about 20 years old. And because of this, they are clearly heartbroken. They're very upset, but they are also extremely determined to put this back, paint it back, and make it even better because they say, guess what? This is proof that this is needed right here. Now, the mural artist who did this has done dozens of social justice murals, and he says, you know what? This vandalism is a first.
The face like this? Never. I've never experienced this, and I won't.
Malcolm Rawling is the artist who painted the mural of activist Marsha P. Johnson, and these are members of a young LGBTQ+ group that organized the first Pride March in Elizabeth last year and made these murals the focal point of the start of the march.
It's targeted. It's hatred, and we don't want that here.
It's a clear sign of transphobia, homophobia, and racism.
The group is called the People's Committee of Elizabeth, and we talked to one founding member, Priscilla Gaona, who is in Hawaii right now.
Huge, huge slap in the face. Huge slap in the face.
She says plans and fundraising are in the works to repaint the mural because it's clearly needed. Marsha P. Johnson was decades ahead of her time. She died when she was 46 in 1992. She was a huge gay rights activist. She was a self-identified drag queen who was a key figure in the Stonewall Uprising of 1969, and she was from Elizabeth, New Jersey. The group TPCOE is raising money on Instagram and Venmo. About $1,500 is needed just for paint to reimagine what was here, plus the artist plans to add to it.
I have something to say. Like I said, I'm a little furious, so I have something to say, and I want to be able to add something to the mural to make it more robust.
I thought that was going to happen to the gay liberation statues in Sheridan Square when they put them up, all those white George Segal statues, but I don't know that it did. But this is...
They were white.
Which was one of the complaints.
Exactly. I think they have had problems over the years with them, particularly early on, but maybe not.
Well, they had problems at Washington State. Yes, in Washington State University. Wait a minute. Hold it.
Central Washington University.
A student stole a rainbow flag from the student union and lit it on fire, filming his crime or her crime, I can't remember, on social media. Arrested and will go through student conduct process. Students are demanding criminal consequences.
In the District of Columbia, two women and one man beat and stabbed and verbally harassed a trans woman in a laundromat, punched her, pushed her up against the machines, stabbed her in the arms and head. Nicaea Armstead is her name. And the video of this, and there is video of this, was so vicious that the local news stations would not air the video. They used a still or two from the video. The beating was so horrible. And then the people who did this, leaving her on the floor, bleeding, picked up their laundry and left.
Say where that was again, Anne.
D.C.
Yes. And, well, that was terrible, horrible, horrible. At least it got national attention.
In Blacksburg, Virginia, another trans woman, Angie Smith, was beaten, stomped on, and killed by a Virginia Tech linebacker, Issa Meeman Etute, 18 years old. They were having their second sexual encounter, and he claims that, you know, it was a big revelation to him that she was trans, and his reaction was to brutally beat her and kill her.
All right. Now, in Fresno, California, Mayor Jerry Dyer, it looks like he wants to fly the rainbow flag, but he's having a fight with the city council. What's the story?
Well, the story is that he didn't want to fly the rainbow flag. He thought this was inappropriate. But then he went to hearings about it and sort of stood in the back and listened and heard people's stories of being thrown out of their homes by their families, rejected by their friends. And it really got to him. He was deeply affected by this. And so he changed his mind, and now he advocated for flying the flag. I think they are flying the flag, and he now refers to it as a symbol of hope, a symbol of inclusion, and a symbol of being supported. So it's a really heartwarming story of how someone can listen and learn, listening being the key.
A tragic story. We told you about Lisa Baines, the actor last week, the stage and screen actor, Gone Girl, Cocktail, Present Laughter on Stage, High Society, an out lesbian. She has died of the traumatic head injury that she suffered in a hit and run with a scooter near Lincoln Center on her way to dinner with her wife, Catherine Cranhold. She was 65 years old. There is a lovely piece by Kevin Sessoms in Grazia about Lisa, with whom he went to Juilliard back in the 1970s, and we will include that in our email. So sad.
Very sad. Very big loss. In Alcoa, Texas, some lovely young teenage girls painted LGBT flags, the trans flag, the rainbow flag, etc., on a small bridge where things like that are often painted. Well, some woman, a Karen, as they say, came along and started yelling at them and had a can of spray paint and spray painted over the flags. They had a polite argument with her. They repainted the flags. Some guy came along in a pickup. He spray painted over the flags. They repainted it. And there was a lovely local news report about them just being totally dedicated to staying with it. And we're going to link to that in our show note, which, as Andy says, if you go to gayusatv.org, you can sign up to receive that.
You can also make a Pride Month contribution to Gay USA. Fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we have 8 minutes left.
Okay, so the Pulitzer Prizes.
Yep.
Out gay Wesley Morris of the New York Times won the prize for criticism for his writing on race and culture. This is his second Pulitzer. He won it with the Boston Globe. The Drama Award went to the gay-themed The Hot Wing King, which I saw, by Kateri Hall, about Black masculinity filtered through experiences of a loving gay couple and their extended family as they prepare for a wing cooking contest. By the way, in history, Eric Cervini's bio of Frank Kameny, The Deviant Swore, was a finalist. And the poetry prize went to Natalie Davis for her collection.
Diaz. I think it's Diaz, isn't it?
Diaz. Apologize. Diaz. Natalie Diaz. Sorry, can't read my own writing. For her collection, Postcolonial Love Poem, an anthem of desire against erasure. She identifies as a queer Latina and Mojave American. And we're going to link to her reading of the poem. And I also want to pay tribute to the fact that they gave Darnella Frazier, the 17-year-old brave woman who shot the George Floyd murder for 10 minutes, was given a special award by the Pulitzer Committee.
And our award for creativity goes to the male couple in Wind Point, Wisconsin, who denied by their neighborhood association the right to fly the rainbow flag, lit up their house as a rainbow.
And the neighbors say they like it.
Of course. All right, international news.
Hungary is going full fascist, banned content in schools deemed to promote homosexuality and gender change. The EU Commissioner for Equality said they're prepared to take measures against them the way they did against the Polish regions that declared themselves LGBT-free zones.
Cut off funding. By the way, I was on a call this weekend with Polish activists who watch our show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Poland. They're great. Very inspiring to talk to them.
Okay.
Hong Kong, right-wing politicians are objecting to government support for the 2022 gay games there. But the leader of Hong Kong says, forget it, we're supporting them. And meanwhile, a court in Hong Kong says same-sex parents can apply for equal parental rights. That's pretty good.
Some brave activists in China, lesbian couple suing a safari park after a discount only applied to a man and a woman. High-level court in Shanghai is taking the lawsuit.
And a town in Lithuania, I think the second biggest, Kaunas, has denied a permit for their pride parade, citing safety concerns. I think things could get a little dicey there.
A lot of competition, but my favorite story of the week, in the Mexican state of Sinaloa, the judge ordered the passage of marriage equality by the Congress in the state and said any legislator who votes against it will be barred from public office for 7 years. And it was approved in a unanimous vote.
Well, 17 of the legislators didn't show up.
All right. They didn't vote against it.
Okay. That's one more state in Mexico down. This is happening state by state. It's excruciating, but it's happening. Turning to AIDS news in Halifax, Canada, a terrible story. Gregory Howard Bowser, 30 years old, has been sentenced to 7.5 months in jail plus a year's probation for aggravated sexual assault for having sex as an HIV positive person and not disclosing it. His partner is not infected. And he had unprotected sex shortly after his diagnosis. He was on drugs and alcohol, fighting with his father. It's a mess. He shouldn't be going to jail.
We will link to this, but there is a free online screening June 24th of the 2018 film 5B about the nurses and caregivers of San Francisco General at the outset of the AIDS crisis. And it'll be followed by a chat with Billy Porter, newly out about having HIV, Ward B nurse Allison Moed Powell Riccio, and nurse Rita Ruth Love, talking about those days. We will link to that. But visit 5bfilm.com to stream the film right now.
And the another good thing from the New York State Legislature, which voted to decriminalize the possession of syringes. Yeah, I know. We've had needle exchanges.
That's only 40 years too late.
Well, never too late, but we've had needle exchange for years, but now people can actually buy an unlimited number of syringes and perhaps not share them and pass infections of various sorts.
Not in Scott County, Indiana.
No.
Soon, anyway. All right, entertainment news?
Yes.
The Grammy Awards, also a first. The new president is an out lesbian, Tammy Hunt, of the Recording Academy that runs the awards. They now have no white men on the board. Hallelujah. Hunt has been the vice chairman. She is a drummer, Emmy-nominated producer, and executive producer for over 30 years.
She worked on music for the Super Bowls. American Idol contestant David Archuleta. He was the runner-up 13 years ago. He says he came out in 2014, but really he's just announcing it now.
Came out to his family, he said.
People do that
to their family and close friends.
He's not sure whether he's gay or bi or asexual. He is a Mormon. He's still a little confused, but welcome to the family, David.
He has similar feelings for both genders, but considered himself asexual. He does not have the urge to have sex, but he wants people to have compassion for those who are LGBTQIA+, like myself.
Okay.
Struggled with his God.
You might want to keep an eye out for this new Israeli film, Sublet. I haven't seen it. I don't know that you have either. John Benjamin Hickey is a U.S. reporter who goes to Israel, meets a younger gay Israeli man. They get involved. This is from the director who made Yossi and Jagger, which was very popular, and something called The Bubble. And I saw excerpts from a new film that Jean Carlomusto is making called Esther Newton Made Me Gay, which is a play on Esther Newton's book about Margaret Mead Made Me Gay. Esther's, man, what a firecracker and what a life. Jean put together about half an hour of excerpts, and you can see a 4-minute excerpt on the website for this, Esther Newton Made Me Gay. Look that up. Anthropologist, she wrote the book on Cherry Grove. She had lots of interesting girlfriends. Check that out. Esther Newton Made Me Gay.
The gayest story of the week, The Estate of Carol Channing, is going up on the block June 17th. For those of you watching now at 10 a.m., we'll put this in the email at the Abell Auction Company in Los Angeles. I'm mentioning it because one of the beneficiaries is Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and the other is Bennington, which was her alma mater.
Next week, Urvashi Vaid on the new huge lesbian survey. We will see you then. Happy continuing Pride Month. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.